listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Roma reap the rewards of a weakened Juventus side as Antonio Conte's men fall to Javi Garcia in the Estadio Olimpico in the Coppa Italia. Manchester City made it 9 on aggregate as West Ham flumped out of the Capital One semi-final. A second leg 3-0 defeat with Negredo getting another 2. But will his shoulder injury be putting his future for the rest of the season in doubt? And there's plenty of cup action coming tonight. Milan take on Udinese. United need to beat Sunderland for David Moyes' sake. And there's plenty to talk about in the transfer window as well. But who is saying that they are the best central midfielder in the world? All will be revealed later on here on World Football Daily. Welcome to the show on Wednesday's edition. I am Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. We're going to be joined a little later on by an Italian football expert who makes his debut today on World Football Daily, Mr. Patrick Kendrick, Italian translator to the Serie A sides and, of course, Italian football commentator as well, joining us here on WFD to take us through some of the Coppa Italia action and some of the action from the Serie A weekend as well. And of course, there's action coming this week. It continues with Milan against Udinese tonight. And of course, Fiorentina taking on Siena in what I would describe as the picturesque derby. As I said yesterday, two of the most beautiful cities in Italy taking on each other in Coppa Italia quarter-final action. But there's plenty of movement around the transfer scene, and that's where I want to start with it today here on WFD, with Wayne Rooney back at Manchester United's training centre, Carrington, yesterday. And a lot of people very happy to see him back. His groin strain that has kept him out for the last few games, that have also seen United lose 4 of their last 5 matches in all competitions. It's not been pretty viewing for Old Trafford fans, aside from that win against Swansea in the league. And United need a boost. Rooney appeared to be that, but reports today in the English press that his return could be short-lived as Rooney looks to depart to Los Blancos. Real Madrid could be very interested indeed in signing Wayne Rooney. Now, it's not, as I say, it's not great reading for United fans, who Rooney has obviously been the star of that side this year. No doubt about it, he's been by far the best United player on the pitch this season. He's galvanised them in games at points and has sometimes been the only player working on the pitch. We all think about that Chelsea game in week 2 of the season on that Monday night where Rooney worked his socks off and everybody else seemed to just stand around and watch him in that United team. excuse me. So United fans will not be happy about seeing Rooney possibly going out the door. It would mean reigniting the partnership of Rooney and Ronaldo. And those two players on their day together, combined with Gareth Bale, would be a phenomenal front three, you have to imagine. Los Blancos destined for destiny and for the decima with those three, you'd have thought, in their attacking lineup. Now, the question is for Real Madrid fans is, where would Rooney fit in? We know that he enjoys playing the out-and-out striker role. He's also been playing a lot of that holding midfield role at Manchester United this year. Now, I can only imagine that with Karim Benzema scoring 10 goals so far in the league this year and having 14 in total so far, that he is not going to be relinquishing that centre-forward role. Now, we know that Carlo Ancelotti likes Rooney. Ancelotti apparently impressed by him, not just this season, but when he was at Chelsea as well. He's impressed by Rooney and apparently quite liked to have signed him back then. And so it's no surprise he's maintained his interest and seen Rooney's peak in form. Sees an interest from Carlo and Real Madrid. So I can only see Rooney wanting to go there because they've got Isco as well, remember? They've got Ilra Mendy, Xabi Alonso, Modric, Bale, Ronaldo, Di Maria. There are plenty of people to take over those spots, and Rooney might not like battling and sitting on the bench so much. And I can only imagine that he'd want to play the out-and-out striker role. It's one of the things that we know that he wants to do at Manchester United. But with Karim Benzema, as I said, getting back into form, do you think that it would be an instant Rooney would be able to go just walk straight into that Real Madrid side? Do you think he'd have to earn it, wouldn't he? He really would have to kind of fight his way through and get into a little bit of a battle, a scrap with Benzema for that front out-and-out position. And there's no way they're going to put two up front with four behind because that limits the number of those fantastic attacking players that they've got coming through in the midfield, Real Madrid. And obviously, having spent money on Bale, there's almost an expectation to get a lot out of him. Ronaldo there, Di Maria, who's had an exceptional season so far as well. Now, Isco has been iffy, let's put it. It's not been the same Isco, I don't think, that we saw at Malaga, that's for sure. And he's obviously been in and out of the side as well this season with the odd niggly injury. But I think that could be a place where Rooney could really thrive at Real Madrid. Benzema leading the line with Rooney tucked in just behind with Bale and Ronaldo flanking those two. That would be a very interesting formation indeed. Now, obviously, United then need to go and replace Wayne Rooney because suddenly they're looking a little thin on the ground on numbers in terms of players that are willing to sit in the heart of the midfield sat behind Robin Van Persie, who should be back from his injury by the end of next week. So, of course, you've got Kagawa. As Jonathan Liu said yesterday, Kagawa would almost be guaranteed, you'd have thought, that starting role behind Van Persie. And surely would be able to do it. We've seen him do it time and time again for Manchester United, for Dortmund, sorry. And it's only a matter of time, I think, before Kagawa gets a string of games, a good solid run in this United side, and is able to continue putting in great performances as he did do in the Bundesliga in Germany. Having said that, it looks likely that if Rooney were to go, and United anyway, looking apparently to line up Juan Mata. Now, Juan Mata coming in changes it, because that would mean that, again, one of those two, Kagawa or Mata, would be battling for that role behind Van Persie, and ideally you'd want to have them both on the pitch at the same time. United, I don't think, would be able to find a formation that would allow them to do that. Also, spending 37 on Juan Mata, 37 to 40 million pounds, that is, on Juan Mata, when you've got Kagawa there, seems like an unnecessary expense when you want really a player that can come in and fill in that role almost as a backup and be willing to sit there and be a backup to Kagawa. Either that, or it's worth just removing Kagawa and finding that backup anyway. Now, Mata would be a very expensive backup to bring in, and that would be unlikely. So what else do you need to do? Well, you need to bring in a backup, as I say, then, to replace Rooney, for someone to sit behind Kagawa, or you show Kagawa the door and you bring in two players in that position, i.e. Mata and somebody else. You also still need to pave over those cracks that we've been talking about all year. And it's almost like Juan Mata, this transfer, is like a great distraction because everybody's thinking, oh, could Juan Mata be off to Manchester United? And nobody's actually saying, well, surely they should be talking about defenders? Surely they should be looking at a replacement for Paul Scholes, which they still haven't done and still don't look like they're looking to do. Now, I'm not saying replacing Paul Scholes is easy, but when we get into our Italian talk a little bit later on and we start chatting about Juventus, there could surely be one or two quality players there that United wouldn't mind bringing in to kind of replace that Paul Scholes position, and who could excel in a similar sort of role. You've also got talk today from Manchester United that Dante has been saying that United are going to be making an approach for him this January, the Bayern Munich defender who many feel should have been involved in that FIFA World 11. We'll be talking about that probably a little bit again later on in the show as well. But the Bayern Munich defender, who people feel should have been involved in that FIFA World 11, could be on his way to Old Trafford, saying that United have been interested this January and they're looking to make moves to take him to England. Now, Dante, if I were you, I would not be moving anywhere. Bayern Munich are, without a doubt, the best footballing side in Europe at this point in time. And you are a key player for them. Why you'd want to move, I don't really understand that one. But If he says United are interested, it doesn't say any of the reports I've seen that that Dante's saying that he would like to move himself, but there is talk about Dante and a possible departure from Bayern Munich with Manchester United circling, but they don't have that pull at the moment, United. Surely, the mediocre side, as we said here on World Football Daily last week, you know, this is a team that if you were to ask anybody where do you want to go and you know you're going to be playing in the starting 11, Bayern Munich or Manchester United, where would you go? It's a very simple answer. Bayern Munich looking like they could win another Champions League final, win a Bundesliga, win the German Cup, win everything once again. United will be struggling to get even a Capital One Cup final place. And I don't think they're going to get past Manchester City, that's for sure, if they do get to the final. They've got a big ask tonight coming up as they take on Sunderland. We'll be talking about that a little later on when Rafa joins us here on World Football Daily. United take on Sunderland, trailing 2-1 after that first leg. And could it be that United are going to flop out of the Capital One Cup, the League Cup, and not even make it to Wembley, despite playing one of the sides at the bottom of the Premier League table in that tournament? We'll talk about that in just a moment, but I'm delighted to say that we're ready for our guest for today on WFD, a man who joins us for the first time to talk all things Italian football. I can tell you, though, from personal experience, that this man, A, knows his stuff. He can talk the talk, almost definitely talk the talk, because he's a translator by heart, but also a fantastic football commentator as well. I'm happy to say, joining us here on World Football Daily, is Mr. Patrick Kendrick here on the show, making his WFD debut. Patrick, a pleasure to have you on the show, mate. Really enjoyed last night's football from the Coppa Italia. You really have to say that it was a cracking game in the Delhi Alpi last night, from in the Stadio Olimpico last night, from a tactical point of view. But it was a very underwhelming Juventus performance last night. Were you surprised at the slightly weakened side that Conte put out?
I wasn't too surprised, because they talked a lot in the build-up to the game as to him making changes. And ultimately, it's a stronger Juventus side, I think, than a lot of people are giving credit for. I've seen a lot on social media today from Bianconeri fans saying that, it was Roma 1, Juventus reserve. You know, I don't think that's really the case, because Juventus' strength, for me, apart from Llorente and Tevez, who've really made the difference in attack this season, albeit they were signed to make the difference in Europe, that didn't quite happen, is really their strength lies in the back three and the midfield three. And they were first choice last night, with the exception of Pogba, who was rested. But Bonucci, Bartali and Chiellini all played at the back, although Chiellini came off for the second half. I think he picked up a knock. He was replaced by Bonna. And the midfield three was Pirlo, Vidal and Marchisio. So the only changes really were the front two. They played Quagliarella and Angiolinco and Storari in goal. But ultimately it wasn't that much of a weakened Juventus side. It just didn't quite happen for them. I think Giovinco was slightly unlucky, to be honest. He was booked in the second half for diving. But early on, there was a big incident midway through the first half when he was caught by Mehdi Benatia, and he was given a yellow card. It was probably about 35 yards out from goal. It could have debatably been a red card. That's where a lot of the controversy has been lying this morning. That and the decision to disallow a Juventus goal at the start of the second half. The ball questionably going beyond the byline. So I think Roma got it right. Juventus set up in the same way they had in the league game a fortnight before, which was to sit and let Roma have a lot of the ball and then try and strike on the break. But unlike in the league game, they didn't get that goal in the first half. And the longer the game wore on, it was more likely that Roma were going to win the game. And that's eventually what happened. But I think it's important, not just for the Coppa Italia and for this Roma side who've been so impressive this season, but also for the league, because Juventus have this 8-point gap in Serie A, and they might just start to have a few doubts now.
I was going to ask you, because we were talking yesterday on the show about how maybe a Juventus win could really sink Roma into the depths of depression. Two big losses to them earlier on in 2014, and it would be a sign that maybe Juventus were going to run away with the title. But do you think this does change that motivation slightly for Roma? It shows that they can play with Juventus, even though they were starting with a starting lineup that's made, I think, just 5 starting appearances this season between the pair of them.
Yeah, I think they can, actually. I know the gap is 8 points, but there's still 18 games to go. Juventus still have some tricky away trips as well, including they have to come back to the Olimpico, and that is a couple of games before the end of the season. So if Roma can stay in touch, that could ultimately decide the title. And the Giallorossi have bought really well in January as well. They brought in Raja Nainggolan from Cagliari, and he's made a huge impact already. He started a couple of days after he first signed in the previous round against Sampdoria, and he's really made a difference. Just gives them an extra option in midfield. Last night they had Pjanic on the bench, who has been linked with a move away this summer, and who is on his day. There's no one better in that position, I don't think, in the entire all across Italy. But it allowed them to play Nainggolan with De Rossi and Strootman, and then bring on Pjanic for the last 20 minutes. And he was ultimately what changed the game. Just as it became a bit more stretched, he broke forward, played the ball to Strootman, and then it was cut back to Gervinho. So Roma have options. They favour this 4-3-3, but they can also go to a 4-2-3-1 as well. And even Totti didn't play particularly well last night. So I think they've got more strength in depth now. They signed Michel Bastos as well. And I think if they can maybe bring one more in January, that could just tip the balance in their favour. But as you said, had they lost last night, two defeats to Juventus, I think from a psychological perspective, that might have been just too much to ask. But since that defeat in Turin, they've won every game and they've not conceded. So that defensive solidity is still there. And it's set up very nicely. Very nicely indeed.
Is Rudy Garcia playing very much the long game? Yes, the Serie A title's still there, but with the signings that he's made and he's adding depth to this Roma side, do you get the feeling that he's planning almost for next season for Champions League football and competing in Serie A?
Absolutely, yeah. When they brought Nainggolan in, there was a lot of talk saying, well, that's it confirmed, that means Pjanic is going to leave. Garcia then pointed out in his press conference that five midfielders for three positions wouldn't be too much if they're playing in Europe, and that very much looks to be the case for next season. Now, I think he's very, very popular in Rome. Well, obviously, the results go a long way towards dictating that, but he's fit in very well as well. In fact, a lot of people say that for a Frenchman, he's got quite a sort of Roman attitude to life. So Roma and Garcia is a very good fit, and I think apart from the occasional problems you get with a fan base like Roma, they're notoriously demanding. If the results continue and they keep playing the great football that they've shown, then he could be there for several years. And they're definitely building something. Roma's policy at the moment is to buy young and cheaply. They've done that in the past to good effect and then sold on for big figures. Just think of people like Eric Lamela, who unfortunately is not happening for him at Spurs, but who was wonderful in Serie A. And they've since added another couple of players recently, Sanabria and Paredes, two South Americans who they've brought in. And and they've even managed to make money on Michael Bradley as well. So no, the transfer business they've done has been exceptional. It's been a great season. There's very little to criticise.
On the other side last night, though, of Juventus, of course, in their midfield, Vidal, who's been having a stellar season. You can't say that he's not been playing exceptional football in that midfield for Juve. But reports coming out, or should I say an article that's come out today in the German press, that he's been stating that he's the best midfielder in the world right now. Does Vidal have any claim to this title in that central midfield role? He's been excellent over 2013. In the start of 2014, but to say he's the best midfielder in the world seems a bit of a stretch to me, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite quiet last night, actually, whereas he was one of the big performers in the league game against Roma. He's already had his best goal scoring campaign, I think, of his career, certainly for Juventus so far this season. He has been the main man, and he's Juventus' top scorer. There's no doubt as to what he can offer, both in terms of his aggression, winning the ball back and getting forward and scoring goals. I think it's a big claim to suggest that he's the best in the world at the moment. But in fact, you could arguably say that Paul Pogba has been performing just as well as Vidal. not as many goals, but there's a few years between them. But it's a tricky one. I'd like to see Vidal go somewhere else. I know he was in Germany before, but obviously, with Juventus going out of the Champions League at the group stage, I think it's a bit of a stretch to suggest that he's the best in the world at his position. But goal-scoring midfielders are hard to come by, and he's made a huge difference to Juventus since he's been there, absolutely, and got better with every year. But personally, if I had to choose between him and Pogba, perhaps, just given the difference in age, I think Pogba's 20 and Vidal's 26. If I had to sign one of them, I'd sign the Frenchman. I just think he offers a bit more long-term and his potential is limitless. But no, I mean, having the two of those in the same team along with Pirlo is just an embarrassment of riches. It really is for Juventus. So my answer to that would be he can't. In my opinion, he's not the best midfielder in the world at the moment, but he's certainly probably in the top five.
I suppose if you're a Juventus fan, you enjoy it while it lasts, I guess, that's for sure. We've got Coppa Italia continuing all week this week and tonight. Struggling AC Milan in Serie A under new manager Clarence Seedorf take on Udinese, who aren't exactly having the best of times either. Both two big sides that will be looking to try and use the Coppa Italia run to kind of turn around their season. Is that a fair reflection on tonight's game going into it? It's quite big for both of them, just for a momentum builder.
It is big, but I actually think that certainly from Udinese's perspective, that they could do with a season without qualifying for Europe. They've been outperforming, really performing beyond their expectations for several years now. And their season starts so early, typically, because they're always involved in Europa League or Champions League preliminary games. And that, coupled with their tendency to sell their best players every year, just means that things are getting progressively more difficult. They're only 3 points above the relegation zone, so I would suggest that going out of the Coppa might not necessarily be a bad thing. Having said that, obviously, results breed confidence. But for Milan, I think it's their best route into Europe. Although with Inter's defeat at the weekend at Genoa and Milan beating Verona, there's now a gap of only just 5 points from fifth place down to 7 points from Inter in fifth place down to Milan in 11th. So with 18 games to go, Seedorf gets them performing as to their potential, I think, because there's still a lot of quality in that squad, then Milan could still qualify through the league. But yeah, they're on probably the better side of the draw, I would suggest. The Milan and Udinese play the winner of the Tuscan derby, which is tomorrow between Fiorentina and Siena. So I think Milan will start favourites, having won that first game under Seedorf, and there's a bit more of a feel-good factor about the place at the moment. And interestingly, the last time they won the Coppa Italia was when Seedorf was still playing for them. That was 2002, 2003, when they won the Champions League against Juve in Manchester. So that augurs well, I suppose.
Bringing up the old omens, that's for sure. But for AC Milan with Seedorf, yes, it's a great lift to the club to have something like him back, but is he going to be good enough as a manager from early thoughts? And I know it's very early to make like sweeping judgments like that, but he was only a player, what, a week and a half ago for Botafogo down in Brazil, and suddenly thrown in at the deep end as a manager.
Yes, but I mean, this is a player who won the Champions League four times. This is someone who, for the last year, has been studying to be a coach in all his time off. I accept what you mean about he's only just ending his playing career, but the fact that he was able to end it in such a quick fashion, I think, with Botafogo being very understanding about that, just shows that this was always something in his mind. If the Milan job came up and he was going to look to go there, and he's Berlusconi's man, and typically when Berlusconi decides who he wants, he gets them and he backs them in the transfer market. And I think Milan do need to spend, whether it's now or in the summer. They need a couple of centre halves, that's for sure. But no, there's quality in the side for sure. Onda's exciting. Balotelli, if they can just find the best role for him, will be an important player again. I mean, just look at the impact he had joining in January last year. If he can go even score half the goals he did between now and the end of the season, then I think they're going to pick up and move up the table. But there's a whole clutch of sides above them who Milan are better than, and I think the games that they've got coming up as well, they've got a winnable run of games, shall we say. So if they can win tonight at home to Udinese, then that's two wins on the spin, three if you include the Coppa game against Spezia in the previous round, and then they go to Cagliari, they entertain Torino, and then the next hard game they've got really is the second week of February. They go down to the San Paolo, they play Napoli. But Yeah, I think they can. I think they can put a run together, Milan. They're much better than their league position suggests, and I think the move to replace Allegri with Seedorf came at the right time.
Just finally, then, Patrick, sir, we've taken up far too much of your time. I know you're a very busy man indeed, and going to be on the move to try and be getting back to cover all these games for tonight. And Fiorentina taking on Siena though on Thursday, probably two of the most picturesque and beautiful cities that you'll ever go to in Italy. But are we going to see picturesque and beautiful football from at least one of them? You'd have thought Fiorentina would be able to dominate a Siena side from Serie B.
You would. I had the fortune of studying in Siena years ago, so I know it's very well. I used to go quite regularly to see them. They were playing in Serie A back at the time. That was 2006-2007. The team's changed a lot since then, but they actually have the same coach, Mario Beretta, who's come back, came back at the start of this season. They've just lost a bit of form in Serie B. They're down in 14th, but they did start with a points penalty. But no, they've got some interesting young players, and their young striker called Rossetti, who's starting to make a name for himself. And this is, you can't underestimate and you can't overstate really how big a game this is for both sets of supporters. This is not just a footballing rivalry. This is a rivalry which has dated back centuries. Florence and Siena both very important in the Middle Ages for Italy, and there's a huge rivalry there. In fact, I went to the this fixture beat in Siena back in 2007, and I went with a friend who is a Siena fan, and we went to a restaurant before and we ate bistecca fiorentina, which is one of the local dishes around there, which is basically Florentine big bit of meat, a bit of steak, and that's symbolic. It was the Siena fans eating their opponents, eating their rivals. So it's a big game, but no, I commented Fiorentina actually at the weekend. They ran out easy winners against Catania, and Alessandro Matti scored a brace on his debut as well. So they've lost Gomez and Rossi to injury, but the rest of the team is working really well. They're on terrific form. They've not conceded a goal in over 600 minutes, which broke a previous club record, which was held by Sebastian Frey back in 2006. So the defence is working very well. The midfield is excellent. And if Matri can keep scoring until Gomez and Rossi come back, then they could definitely run Napoli close. But I think Fiorentina will edge this one because they're starting because they play at home. And I imagine they'll play Milan in the semi-final, which just leaves next week's match between Lazio and Napoli to decide who's going to play Roma. So yeah, we could have four top sides in the Coppa Italia team car.
Who says that these?
I have to call it for sponsorship reasons in the semi-final. So it should be a good game tonight. Well worth watching for a neutral, I would suggest.
Who says that these cup competitions are dead and buried? I have in Italy potentially four of the biggest sides in the country in the semi-finals of the Coppa Italia. Patrick, it's an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you and a catch up with you about all things Italian football, mate. If you don't mind, we will be calling upon your services, I'm sure, as we continue through the Serie A season to see where these predictions of yours of AC Milan potentially getting European football are going to go. I mean, I'm all backing you. I'm all on your side for that one, but I just worry about the club so much at the moment, that's for sure. But we will be giving you another dial up at some point, and look forward to catching up with you again very soon, mate.
Pleasure. Cheers, Ollie. Look forward to it.
Cheers, Patrick. Have a good one, mate.
Thanks
a lot. Patrick Hendrick here joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through the Coppa Italia tonight. And of course, a very busy night of action in Italian football as AC Milan take on Udinese in a game that could be a big turnaround for Milan. If they get a big win and results just start going their way, I'm sure they would love to see some better performances coming from this team and actually have a bit of positivity around this club. I mean, Patrick's talking about a gap of minimal 7 points between Inter and AC at the moment, between 5th and 11th, and it's not much, that's for sure, but Milan haven't shown any consistency for me to be able to turn around that sort of gap. But there's plenty of time still left in this season, and a good cup run would be do the side the world of good. And of course, that Tuscan derby coming up, Fiorentina against Siena as well, a very big game for Siena as they look to perform a bit of cup magic, so to speak, against their Tuscan rivals. A big thanks there once again to Patrick for joining us here on World Football Daily, making his WFD debut. I'll let you into a little. I met Patrick in a studio at about 3 o'clock in the morning. We both ended up doing kind of CONCACAF Champions League football games one night, And it was only me and him. We were the only two people in the studio. So we started chatting at like half time and at full time and whatnot. And he told me he was a translator and stuff. And then lo and behold, I go down to the Emirates Cup in the beginning of this season, sit down, start doing some work, and who's sat next to me in the press box but Mr. Kendrick, who's there doing some official translation business for the clubs down at the Emirates Cup. And he's later moved on and up to off to Italy to cover Italian football. I think it helps being able to speak a language, that's for sure.
Yeah, helps.
Lucky,
that
helps. Lucky man.
Well, weren't you working on Mandarin? I thought you were working on Mandarin. Like we were making plans to take over the Asian market by you learning Mandarin.
My Mandarin is not getting much better, you know. The closest thing I get to speaking Chinese is saying the numbers off the Chinese menu when I'm ordering it. Like that's and I'm saying them in English. I'm not even saying them in Chinese. Like that's about as far as I can come in terms of learning Chinese. With languages, Ref, unfortunately, I'm terrible. Absolutely terrible. I wish I was good. I wish I was one of those people that just clicked with languages. And I think the only way I'd be able to learn something like Italian or something like that would be going and sticking myself in Italy. Because sure. You'd just have to learn sure. the language. And
Well, that's actually how most of our kind of, you know, Italian correspondents who are from the UK, your Richard Whittles, Max Patrick, if you guys remember from back in the day, even Paul Visby, they obviously took Italian beforehand and they studied it a little bit. But it's so much easier everyone says it's easier to pick up if you're actually, you know, actually embedded in the language and seeing it and hearing it on a regular basis all over the place. And that's really, I mean, yeah, never mind. I'm not even gonna make excuses for why I'm a bad Mexican, but I don't speak Spanish because primarily my dad didn't really speak it to me. I just always used English instead.
Here's the world's smallest violin coming out.
I know.
Papa never spoke to me in Espanol.
I met my dad. No.
No, not here at we all. Go.
No. But actually, I am slightly, you know, my wife is really into kind of pushing the idea of like trying to teach our daughter Spanish. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm relearning little bits of the language that I already know, but yeah, I get to kind of talk a little bit of Spanish with her, and she kind of just gets it, because when you're a baby, Juice...
Well, smiles, let me guess, she looks at you, smiles, nods, and giggles, as she does with everything that you say to her, right?
Or she says, yeah? You know, like, I'll be like, ¿Quieres agua, Olivia? And she'll be like, yeah.
And
like
you're like, no, it's C.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, we're teaching her colors and stuff, and she kind of like she tries to say the words, but it's just not there yet. So, anyways, I digress. We'll work on the Mandarin takeover later. Where do you want to start, Juice?
Well, I want to start with my tenuous link between the beginning of the show and what we've just been talking about with Mr. Kendrick about Italian football and Vidal and his comments. I'm the greatest central midfielder in the world. There's nobody better than me. There are players who are trying to copy my style, Vidal saying. Unfortunate timing that his comments come out after a sloppy 1-0 loss to Roma in the Coppa Italia last night. But more importantly, with the possibility Rooney in his last 18 months of his contract and the rumours that Real Madrid are going to make this move for £25 million or so in the summer to take Rooney to the Bernabeu. There's Kagawa waiting to come in. We touched on that with Jonathan Louis yesterday on the Juan Mata talk and whether Mata would be the right player to go. Would somebody like Vidal be an ideal player, a player to sit kind of just behind somebody like Kagawa, who's still aggressive enough going forward, but can also be a ball winner and play the ball out from spaces very nicely as well in the heart of the midfield? I mean, Vidal, is he the best player? Is he the best central midfielder in the world, first and foremost, Raf? And
no,
secondly, is he a fit for Manchester United? Is there any way that United would be able to get him as well, considering that they don't seem to be able to buy anybody apart from ex-Everton players at the moment? And even that's just Marouane Fellaini. So.
Sure. Is he the best central midfielder? No. In my opinion, no. I would much rather have, you know, any... A chock full of names.
Javi Garcia.
Bag full of names,
Javi Martinez, Schweinsteiger,
sure, yeah.
Javi.
I would easily rather have like a Javi or an Iniesta over Vidal, just because of of the calm and general, you know, intelligence in their minds, really, the football brains that these guys have. Vidal, don't get me wrong, very, very good player, very talented. I think he's potentially has too many of the negative South American traits. I do feel like he will go down easy. I think it was this season where he was literally caught jumping over a tackle in the box and crying for a foul when nobody touched him. And that's just kind of, you know, that is part of his game. I think he's probably a little too slight or a little, you know, I'm not sure he'd be able to handle the physicality of the Premiership and the kind of constant attacking play and aggressiveness of it. I think he's very well suited for Serie A. He could potentially play and succeed in Spain. I don't know if he could handle Germany, to be honest. I just don't think so. So I think he probably came out a little too much. Juan Mata, on the other hand, I think he's proven he can handle the Premiership, England in general, and generally top level competition, where it is.
Is he a fit though for United? I mean, Mata doesn't solve any problems with United. He almost creates a new one because Moyes has to choose between Kagawa or Mata again. He doesn't solve.
I don't think so, because ultimately he's already chosen over Kagawa, no matter, you know, who he already has. So it looks like Mata. Well, and for me, I think Mata's also a much better player than Kagawa. So I think that, you know, Mata gets the starting gig straight off the bat.
God, don't you need to give this guy a chance though, Kagawa?
I mean, it's been so hard done by
at United.
Yeah, I'm with you, Juice. I think that Kagawa deserves a chance. I think that he is an incredibly talented player, Juice.
I thought he was excellent last year when he played. You know, I thought he really did well, and I've not seen him put in a bad performance, like an atrociously bad performance this year. All I've seen is a guy who doesn't ever get the ball in and doesn't get to play a position that he feels comfortable in this year at United. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes do you ever find yourself sat there kind of looking at formations, looking at players, and you see yourself looking at the TV and you just think, oh God, I could do a better job at picking a squad than this guy. Like, it's so arrogant. I mean, everybody loves the armchair pundit, you know. And everybody becomes the armchair pundit. I'm sure when the Winter Olympics comes around in Sochi, we're going to be sat there.
The stick manager, if you got your sticks, and everybody who knows, everybody who plays FIFA, pick up them sticks. Go ahead, pick them up. Everyone who's a sticks manager, who, you know, picks their formation, even comes up with their own formations. I had a guy in college who used to come in, and he had a saved formation that was like a 2-5-3. I don't know, man. I probably got my math wrong there. That's why I wasn't a math major in college. But this guy, you know, he could probably come up with a better formation than David Moyes sometimes. I just don't understand. I'm with you, Juice.
No, but
I think that Kagawa deserves a shout.
It's the arrogance of the armchair pundit that I like, which many of us are for a lot of the time, you know, because as I was saying, when the Winter Olympics come around, I'm sure I will be sat there at some point watching like the luge or the skeleton bob or something, and somebody will make a, you know, be slow in a section on the bobsleigh run. And I will think, oh yeah, it's because they went a little bit too high on turn 3. Because I've been watching it for an hour, and suddenly I'm an expert on this track and know the exact line these people need to be taking. Like, it's the same kind of level as that. We have no idea what goes on the training ground and whatnot. But you do sometimes think, just put players in the positions that you know they're comfortable with. You can see chemistry coming from different players in different areas. And I just think Kagawa has been so hard done by, and this £37 million move for Mata that is apparently, according to the press in England, drawing dangerously close to taking place.
It's the wrong move
for Manchester United in every way, shape or form. It's like dangling a very expensive pair of keys in front of a cat going, look at the shiny, ooh, Juan Mata. Oh, what about all those other... don't worry about them. Don't worry about all those other problems that we've still got and had all year. No, we're just going to bring in somebody who is, you know, will end up being, I'm sure, he'll play ahead of Kagawa. And I'm sure if Rooney goes, the Wan-Mata will be slotting behind Robin van Persie, and that will be a kind of a front two for United, with Mata leading the line of a three-man midfield with two holding midfielders. But they don't have those holding midfielders to make it stable, and they don't have a back four that's stable enough. So it doesn't fill in any of the problems, and it's a hell of a lot of money to spend on something that isn't essential at Manchester United at the moment, when in fact they're probably better off spending £35 million on Vidal or somebody like that and trying to lure him away from Juventus, which Juve J was not been too happy about. No. He sent us an email about that. When we were talking about this, David Moyes apparently wanting to bring back Pogba and Vidal, or well, not bring back Vidal, but bring Vidal to Manchester United. And Jay giving us an email saying, "Are you on crack?" I always like emails that start with something like that.
Juve, he's not far off. No.
Juve is probably the most speak for yourself, Raf. Is probably the most financially stable club in Italy, and Vidal just signed a new contract. Juve is in a historic title run, a third star possibly. Are they going to let Vidal go? Especially not for the money that United would offer. For Pogba, I think it would take Christian Bale money, which I'm pretty sure is either a reference to the movie star, and I thought that's what it was at first. I was like, it's going to take that much money? That's not that much money. Bale gets like $4 million a movie? But but no, he was talking
you
about...
Go back and
he said
clarify.
Gareth Bale.
Yeah, it was Gareth Bale.
It would take Christian Gareth Bale money to pry him out of Juve. He's happy there. The club is happy with him. So it'd have to be something they couldn't turn down. I love how the English press and the English fans generally just assume that they can buy whomever they wish. Juventus are the favourites to win the Scudetto. They are going to make a big push for the Europa League because the final is in their home stadium. And I think they will make a better push in the Champions League next year. Remember, Dortmund had two abysmal seasons in the Champions League before they reached the final. Well, we should remember that, but I also haven't seen enough from Juventus to make me think that they do have a squad that is able to push on in the Champions League. One thing that I have a problem with about Vidal's comments as well, is that Vidal can smash it week in, week out in Serie A, but Serie A is a league that, whether we like it or not, and I love Serie A, I think the entertainment value that you get from watching Serie A is fantastic, but it is not a league that is considered as high quality in terms of the caliber of team in it as the likes of La Liga, the likes of the Bundesliga, and the likes of the English Premier League. You know, and I think that is shown by the fact that Italian sides in recent years have struggled in Europe and haven't looked like any sort of a side that could win a Champions League. You know, when you get into the final stage of the Champions League, you think Barca, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Dortmund now, I guess, and then you kind of think, well, what about PSG? What about Manchester City? What about Chelsea? Manchester United don't feature in that conversation anymore. But the Italian sides don't get mentioned in that grouping. And for Vidal to start saying that he's the best midfielder in the world, he would have to do it with Juventus on a European stage. And they've not done it really on a European stage with Vidal there. So I think he may be able to walk around everybody in Serie A and be an incredible Serie A midfielder. And there's no doubt he's having a stellar year and was fantastic last season as well. But I don't think he can start making claims that he should have been in that FIFA World 11 when that's kind of going on. And Juve are struggling to compete in Europe. I think it makes it very difficult indeed. Nobody really took many of those Dortmund players seriously until they started doing it in Europe. So why should Juventus be an exception to that rule? Let us know your thoughts, though, on Vidal. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. I'm sure Jay will have something to say about that. So, Jay, I'm just going to call you out. I don't think Vidal's the best midfielder in the world.
Well,
how you like me now?
I'm sorry, before we get too far away from this, I also want to say that you're right. You know, Juventus are kind of hunting that title that's going to get the third star this year. If you want stars, you can always just go to Rangers. We have five over our crest. Yeah, that's 50 plus. Anyways, moving on. My point was that, you know, they practically have the title in the bag at this point, Juice. They could potentially take this January transfer window, make one move that kind of sets them up for the summer, and then, you know, make another one or two moves in the summer that really kind of bolsters that squad and does kind of take them to the next level, at least potentially gets them to the knockout phase of the Champions League. I'm not going to put my faith in them again, because I tipped them to win the Champions League completely this year, and they're not even making it to the knockout.
Well,
round,
you
so
tipped
like
them.
Fool.
You tipped them last year as well, I believe, at one point.
Potentially, probably. But
definitely.
You know what? Actually, I will come out and say it. My Italian football kind of predictions are just blown out of the water. I mean, look under last night's match. I could have swore to you that Roma were going to lose that match and just be abysmal and dismal for the rest of the season and all downtrodden and there was no real point to playing the rest of the season because Juventus were going to walk away with it. But instead, I was proven wrong. I'm okay with that.
Mistake by Bonucci at the near post, giving Jovinho the opportunity to score that goal.
Cheeky little goal too.
Little kung fu kick, very nice.
Yeah,
very nice indeed.
Yeah, I like that.
Thanks for the sound effects. We should have just kept that as an individual recording. Whenever we mention any sort of ninja style or Zlatan, we have that play every time. I didn't think Rome were going to win that last night, but Juve put out a slightly weakened side as well. So they've only really got themselves to blame in that sense. Juventus out of the Coppa Italia tonight. A big thanks, as I said earlier, to Patrick Kendrick for taking us through his thoughts on that game that he was covering last night and, of course, giving us a updated look at Udinese against AC Milan tonight and Fiorentina against Siena. Let's bounce away from Italy slightly. Let's talk about Real Madrid, Raf. Let's talk about Karim Benzema, because all this talk of Manchester United and I touched again on this earlier on in the show with Rooney, with the fact that they spent a lot of money on Isco, the fact that they've got Ilaria Mendy, they've got Xavi Alonso back, they've got Luka Modric, they've got Khedira in there, and they've got Benzema scoring goals. Do they need Rooney? Would it be smarter for them to buy somebody who can be a backup to Benzema as opposed to somebody like Rooney, who is going to get frustrated if he doesn't play in the position that he wants and if he doesn't play regularly enough? Benzema scored 14 goals this year, which, behind Cristiano Ronaldo, who shoots at every opportunity and most of the time scored an absolute cracker on the weekend, the opening goal against Betis. Gareth Bale's free kick's just absolute stunner as well, if you haven't seen that. But should they be looking into bringing somebody like Rooney, when you could bring in maybe a backup instead and find depth, as we saw kind of Roma have done with Michel Bastos, bringing in players that are happy to take a slight back seat to the big guns and are willing to battle for their places when it comes? Do they need that striker again that we were talking about when they got rid of Higuain? He'd had a poor year. Benzema had a poor couple of years. And we were talking about, do Real Madrid need to buy an out-and-out striker? I mean, do they still need that? Or is Benzema actually proving the critics wrong?
Benzema hasn't proven me wrong, particularly, Juice. I have been kind of... I was really excited, I guess, to see him move to Madrid initially, but... to be honest, he has left a lot for me to be desired, I guess, because I feel like he should be much better than what he is. His goal tally should be much higher than it actually is, especially considering the kind of talent around him and the general league that he plays in. Obviously, look at Leo Messi. I'm not saying he's not, or you know, I'm not trying to compare him too much to Leo Messi, but he is essentially a world-class striker in the sense that he is one of France's best. And he should be able to kind of, you know, come somewhat close to that. And I just don't think he has that capability. So I do believe that if Rooney was to play kind of abroad, Real Madrid could be one of those places that could, I was going to say Americanize themselves for him, but more like English eyes or, I don't know. I'm not sure what that is. Anglicize? Whatever you guys call themselves. Britishize? I don't know. Basically, make it enough English, enough home feeling for him that he isn't kind of put off by the fact that he's living abroad or in a different country that has a completely different language than what he's used to. I think that he could kind of find comfort in Real Madrid in particular, because...
Well, he's got Ronaldo and Bale there, hasn't he? Bale, an English speaker, yeah. Ronaldo, his mate at Manchester United.
Right, right. And again, I think that it's such a global brand that, you know, although they are a Spanish club, there's probably plenty of English going on and to be found, and yeah, he'll be fine. He would be fine there.
Well, I don't know if they need a Wayne Rooney with the play that Benzema's put in this year. It's been a vast improvement on what we saw last year. Elsewhere in La Liga, Atletico Madrid confirming that their sponsors will be Azerbaijan again. The land of fire will be donning their shirts. And Barca are still in trouble around Neymar. This thing continues to tick on. And we need to get one of our Spanish experts to guide us through what's been taking place. Here are the key facts. No, around Neymar's transfer to Barcelona. Barca saying that they only paid 57 million euros for Neymar. Unfortunately, El Mundo has published a paper in Spain, has published some slightly different figures that include an extra, well, I think it's we're looking at an extra kind of 30 odd million or something like that.
And how does that just kind of disappear, right?
Like, yeah, well, that's, I was gonna say, that's got to be in the book somewhere. Somebody hasn't gone, oh, don't worry about that. Oh, that was just
I think we sneezed that out of the Kleenex.
That was Benzema's tapas bill from his birthday party. Don't worry about it. but in all seriousness, an extra fee including a 10 million euro signing bonus, a 2.6 million euros to secure the deal, whatever that would mean. Another 8.5 million on other concepts as well. There were other expenses too, which Barca's board has owned up to, including a 7.9 million paid for preferential rights over three Santos players and two friendly matches at an additional cost of 9 million euros. On top of that, Neymar's father has received 8.5 million extra for other items. That's extra to the 40 million that his company N&N received for the sale of Neymar. Santos only getting 17 point. I mean, you look at these amount of money that have been thrown about, and you wonder, Santos have been gypped. But yeah, in this transfer deal, a hell of a lot. In addition to the 40 million that he was paid via N&M, Neymar's father would have also apparently received a 2.6 million in commission as a proportional share of the player's transfer fee, 54 million for five seasons at Barca. Yet the club has claimed that it hasn't paid any commission to Neymar's dad. There's so many kind of millions just being flung about here by Barca in what is a very convoluted deal.
Let's be honest.
Spells problems.
Like we kind of stated initially, I think that it should be very, very easy and clear to sort out what kind of figures are being tossed around. So if they are saying, Barcelona paid X amount to Santos, that should be able to be accounted for. And if they did, and if however much money went to Neymar's dad, then that should be able to be accounted for, because that is a hefty sum of money. It's not like, we threw him an extra $500, which even then, I feel like I would take an extra $500 anytime. I mean, please, if anybody has some extra cash laying around that they're just willing to dispose of or would throw down the toilet.
Well, it's
please send it to Rafael Gonzalez, care of World Football Daily here in Orange, California.
Well, it looks like the Neymars are going to be pretty well off after this deal. With the total transfer deal running to around about 90.6 million for a variety of these different odd million bits, shall we put it, being thrown about to in different areas to different companies, to the father's company, etc. It's what been worked out apparently that the Neymar camp, so it's Neymar, his dad, his family, the company that they run, N&N, is set to receive around about 105.1 million euros for this overall deal. So while Santos are getting, a lovely, 17 million. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, no, that's really useful. Neymar and his father and co are going to be making, it's estimated, around about 105 million euros. This is going to run. It's been made very unclear yet as to what the repercussions could be for Barca as a club, which is why I want to get one of our Spanish experts on to talk about this, to enlighten us, so to speak, because I've been finding it very difficult to find the information that would say what the repercussions could be for Barca and Sandro Rosell for the misappropriation of 40 million euros, especially in when you consider the economic climate that Spain is in right now. I mean, it's just taking the mick completely by Barcelona at this moment in time. And would that make him more valuable than than Bale?
Yeah, I mean, ooh.
That's awkward. Yeah, I mean, Ronaldo was cheesed off enough that Bale had taken his crown, let alone a Barca player doing so. We will be investigating that into more detail, hopefully later on this week when we get a Spanish expert to take us through some of the findings in the case against Sandro Rosell and Barcelona. In the meantime, Cesc Fabregas has turned around and said that Neymar reminds him of Cruyff, which I find very difficult to understand because surely Cesc has never played with Cruyff and has only seen video footage. And I know you can obviously judge a lot from watching video footage and whatnot. That's what we do every single week watching football. But isn't it? I do find it a little odd that Fabregas comes out and says that when, if you're talking about your teammate, you'd expect him to talk about one of the great teammates that he's played with, like maybe, oh, he reminds me of Henri or something like that. You know, not he reminds me of Cruyff, somebody that Fabregas never had the opportunity to play with. It's just a very peculiar statement to me. I don't really see what is coming up there, that's for sure. Tonight, obviously, Manchester United take on Sunderland as well in the Capital One League Cup semi-final. Do they turn it around, Raf?
No.
You think they're crashing out?
Yes, I think so. Because I put so much faith in them, they should have kind of had this nailed and done and dusted in the first leg. Unfortunately, they didn't, and therefore, I think that because of all the distractions on and off the field, I think United crash out, and this gets the papers really, really fired up about Moise.
I mean, if Moise doesn't, he's not looking like he's going to get them Champions League football this year. If they crash out of the League Cup, they're already out of the FA Cup, and if they're out of the Premier League, you know, if they drop out of the Champions League to Olympiacos, which, let's bear in mind that Mitroglou is one of the top firing strikers in European football this season in a goals-to-game ratio, that's for sure. I know it's the Greek Super League and people will turn their nose up at it and whatnot, and Mitroglou is making mincemeat of those defences, but he's a good finisher. He's a very good finisher. And this Olympiacos side will be buoyed by the season that they're having. They're dominating the league at the moment. Could make it very, very difficult indeed for United, especially with the long trip to Greece. If they can get something in Athens, it makes life very difficult for David Moyes and co. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they crash out of all competitions, can we then start talking about a crisis? Because they're out of the Premier League. They could, with a few more poor results, be out of the Champions League spot race. I mean, if they're not making the Champions League and they're out of all cups by, you know, end of February when the Champions League takes place, is Moyes then looking down the barrel of a gun waiting to be ditched?
It is like adding an extra ton of pressure on top of his shoulders. I do think, Juice, that generally ownership will give him through this summer and into the start of next year. I think he is going to be kind of really scrutinized on what he does this summer and how, you know, this squad is going to be bolstered and essentially revived, because that's what it needs. I'm not so much on the Gordon Hill tip who thinks that this is the absolute worst squad ever invented in the history of Manchester United, but it's damn close, and it definitely needs to be retooled completely. And I think that, you know, he will be given through the summer and probably into the beginning of next year before he's really kind of going to be under the gun. So I think he, no matter what happens, no matter if he loses to Sunderland, which I expect him to do that. I'm sorry, Gio, I know it's your team, but I see them going out to Sunderland. I see this, you know, the papers kind of really swirling, and I actually see that kind of affecting this transfer window for them, because, you know, if they do crash out, Juice, let's be honest, everybody else realizes that they're struggling, that they are in dire need of a revamp, of a retooling, of a, you know, just a complete overhaul of that squad. So they are in need of players and talent. They will be charged a premium for that right now, just because everybody else knows that.
It's going to be a very interesting end of the season for David Moyes and his men. They take on Sunderland tonight in League Cup action in the Capital One Cup, should I say, second leg semi-final.
Juice.
Yep.
I'm sorry if I, you know, just in case, I just want this said kind of out loud, so you know it's recorded. If I did really bad today, just please, don't fire me by text, okay? Please, don't fire me by text.
What would make you say that, Rafa?
Well, I mean, Paul Ince, he was fired by text. I just, you know, it's a cruel world, that world of football. So, you know, again, just please, at least give me an email.
It's not a great thing though if you're a manager and you're trying to sell your club's asset, which is also your son, off to another club. Surely Paul Ince should have realised that getting rid of Tom Ince was a poor idea for Blackpool's future, and he's not done a good job there, that's for sure. But yeah, you're right, he has been kind of harshly done there with a text message, that is for sure. Manchester United take on Sunderland tonight in the League Cup semi-final second leg, looking to book their place against Manchester City. And I'm sure, Raf, you will be on worldfootballdaily.com at some point today as well, saying which of City's three strikers do you think is the most important and which one would you rather have in your side on our daily poll. Edin Dzeko, Sergio Aguero, or of course the beast Negredo, as they booked their way into the Capital One Cup final last night with that 3-0 win over West Ham United. They kept it under double figures. They were nice. Just 9-0 on aggregate for West Ham against Manchester City tonight as well in the Coupe de France. PSG take on Montpellier. That's the big game from those ties. Monaco in action as well as Bordeaux, Olympique Lyon, and Toulouse, expecting all the league sides to make their way through those ties. Though Milan take on Udinese tonight. The Copa del Rey sees Real Sociedad taking on Racing Santander, and Lionel Messi could make his 400th appearance for Barcelona against Levante tonight as well. We'll have a little look back on some of Messi's best moments in a Barca shirt tomorrow on the show. That's basically because we don't want to jump the gun too early. If we did it today, then, and he didn't make an appearance tonight, which is unlikely, but still, it'd look embarrassing for us. As embarrassing as drawing with Levante on the weekend, which is what Barca did. Will an upset be in store there? I wonder. We will see tomorrow on the show. Until then, though, take care. Have a cracking evening of football. Enjoy it while you can. We will see you at the same time tomorrow on Thursday. Have a good one.